Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with returning guest Dr. Carmen Bolter about her documentary, The New Atlantis. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. What the cell phone industry doesn't want you to know about radiation concerns. A leading expert on health effects from cell phone radiation goes to battle against a multi-trillion dollar industry. In her 2011 book, Disconnect, National Book Award finalist, former senior White House health advisor, and internationally regarded epidemiologist Deborah Davis revealed that the cell phone industry is knowingly exposing us to dangerous levels of electromagnetic radiation. No small problem when you consider that of the roughly 7 billion people on this planet, about 6 billion of us now use mobile phones. In a recent analysis for the Huffington Post, Davis examined the cell phone industry's long-term strategy devised in the early 90s to deal with studies showing cell phone radiation damages DNA, noted in a 1994 Motorola memo. This strategy, wrote Davis, quote, remains alive and well today. And by the way, listeners, Motorola is one of those companies that's on the boycott, divest, sanction list. The article continues. Here's another story. This is on the Natural News site. GMO feed turns pig stomachs to mush. If you have stomach problems or gastrointestinal problems, a new study led by Dr. Judy Carman may help explain why. Pigs fed a diet of genetically engineered soy and corn showed a 267% increase in severe stomach inflammation compared to those fed non-GMO diets. In males, the difference was even more pronounced, a 400% increase. In parentheses, it's mentioned, for the record, most autistic children are males, and nearly all of them have severe intestinal inflammation, a very important correlation. The study was conducted on 168 young pigs on an authentic farm environment and was carried out over a 23-week period by 8 researchers across Australia and the USA. The lead researcher, Dr. Judy Carman, is from the Institute of Health and Environmental Research in Kensington Park, Australia. The study is the first to show what appears to be a direct connection between the ingestion of GMO animal feed and measurable damage to the stomachs of those animals. Tests also showed abnormally high uterine weights of animals fed the GMO diets, raising further questions about the possibility of GMOs causing reproductive organ damage. The study also found that rats fed GM corn suffered severe kidney damage as well as shockingly high rates of premature death. Why weren't these studies done before GMOs were unleashed into the global food supply? The GMO biotech industry was able to escape any meaningful regulation of GMOs in the U.S. by ridiculously claiming GMOs were substantially no different from non-genetically engineered crops. Quote, they're all the same, we were told, and the USDA bought it. A lot of people who make important decisions now in the USDA and the FDA were once working with Monsanto or other agribusinesses, often referred to as the revolving door. That's what we're up against right now. You see the same pattern with cell phone use. Here's another story by Ethan A. Huff on the Natural News site, Australia to Unleash Genetically Modified Wheat, and the subtitle, Who Will Burn Down These Fields and Stop This Human Rights Horror? It might sound drastic, but the torching and removal of unwelcome genetically modified organisms is precisely how the people of countries throughout Europe, Asia, and elsewhere have effectively stopped the commercial deregulation of dangerous GMOs in the past, and it may be the only effective remedy right now in Australia, where government officials are poised to unleash the world's first commercial GM wheat, which has been shown to permanently silence human genes and even lead to early death among young children. Just want to mention, remember a number of years ago when there was all that HARP activity over Australia and they had wicked rains and floods. Farmers sold their land, pennies on the dollar. This is, I'm sure, what they talk about in those G8 meetings, Bilderberg Group. They're talking about slowly synthesizing biology, including human beings. The article continues. Here's another story. Russia warns Obama, Monsanto. The shocking minutes relating to President Putin's meeting this week with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry reveal the Russian leader's extreme outrage over the Obama regime's continued protection of global seed and plant biogenetic giants Syngenta and Monsanto in the face of a growing bee apocalypse that the Kremlin warns, quote, will most certainly lead to world war. According to these minutes released in the Kremlin by the Minister of Natural Resources and Environment of the Russian Federation, Putin was so incensed over the Obama regime's refusal to discuss this grave matter that he refused for 3 hours to even meet with Kerry, who had traveled to Moscow on a scheduled diplomatic mission, but then relented so as to not cause an even greater rift between these two nations. At the center of this dispute between Russia and the U.S., this MNRE report says, is the undisputed evidence that a class of neuroactive insecticides chemically related to nicotine known as neonicotinoids are destroying our planet's bee population, which, if left unchecked, could destroy our world's ability to grow enough food to feed its population. Companies such as Monsanto, Bayer, Dow, DuPont, they now control nearly 100% of the global market for genetically modified pesticides, plants, and seeds. Also to note about Syngenta, this report continues, is that in 2012 it was criminally charged in Germany for concealing the fact that its genetically modified corn killed cattle and settled a class action lawsuit in the U.S. for $105 million after it was discovered they had contaminated the drinking water supply of some 52 million Americans in more than 2,000 water districts with its gender-bending herbicide atrazine. To how staggeringly frightful this situation is, the MNRE says, can be seen in the report issued this past March by the American Bird Conservancy, wherein they warn the whole planet is in danger, quote, as part of the study on impacts from the world's most widely used class insecticides, nicotine-like chemicals called neonicotinoids, the American Bird Conservancy has called for a ban on their use as seed treatments and for the suspension of all applications pending an independent review of the product's effects on birds, terrestrial and aquatic invertebrates, and other wildlife. Before we go to Dr. Bolter's interview, we hear an excerpt from past guest, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, that gives us a little context of the GDV camera technology. Let's have a listen. Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, he's the professor of physics at St. Petersburg State Technical University in Russia, one of the main developers of something called electrophotonics. It's based on something else called the gas discharge visualization. And this is the device, Dr. Korotkov, that you're able to actually see energy fields around the body. And now physicians are able to detect imbalances in the body using some of this technology. Can you describe a little bit about electrophotonics?
Yeah, we have developed this instrument more than 15 years ago. And it was next step after Kirlian effect. Maybe a lot of our listeners have known this effect. It is a photography of light coming from different subjects in electromagnetic fields. So this photography was quite popular, but it was impossible to use it in medicine or in some practice. That's why when we have developed electronic instrument based on modern optical systems, modern electronic systems, plus very complicated computer processing using nonlinear mathematics, then we were able to make new jump. And now this technology is widely used worldwide by thousands of professionals, medical doctors, researchers, people, to make analysis of energy of the body. And this analysis allows us to have to see the level of well-being. So we can detect and make evaluation of the level of health. We can detect possible weak zones of the body. And we can detect, in many cases, upcoming problems, not yet presented on somatic level, not yet presented as symptoms, but potential dangers. For example, you know that the main danger and the main cause of death in the world, those are cardiovascular problems.
Oh, say that again?
It means heart problems, yes, and brain problems. And it is infarct myocarditis, it is different brain problems. This is the main danger of the modern world. But, of course, if people have this problem, then it's not just from blue sky. They have it for a long time, and only at some moment it may cause real serious problem. So we can detect this situation long before serious condition. We can tell people, okay, look, you have really serious functional problem. Please take care without using medications, just by using normal means of complementary or alternative medicine. And then people may be healthy, they may be in for many, many years, and they may have no problems at all.
Can you tell listeners a little bit about the imaging of the 10 fingers and how the health of the individual is determined by the light signature around the fingers?
We take measurements from all 10 fingers of our hands. Then computer make analysis of light coming from every finger. And this light is related to different mediums of traditional Chinese medicine. So this way it is related to different systems and organs of the body. Then it is related to principles of traditional Indian medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. And in computer, we create image of energy field around the body. We create more than 30 parameters, scientific parameters. We make evaluation of those parameters. And this allows professional medical doctor to see what's the level of energy and what's the level of condition of every system and organ. So it is express early stage analysis of functional state of the body.
Has the scientific and medical community embraced this research at all?
We have more than 200 papers published on research in medicine. A lot of them published in English, many in other languages as well. We have about 11 or 12 PhD dissertations defended on this topic in medicine only. And in Russia, this approach is accepted as a medical instrument.
Oh, interesting.
Of course, it's not yet having FDA approval in the United States, mm-hmm. but we are slowly moving on this line. We had very intensive research under the guidance of National Institute of Health in the United States. We have many doctors and professionals in many centers, hospitals, universities of the United States. So we plan that several years it will be very well known and more accepted. Because every new technology should take time to be accepted in medicine. It's absolutely normal. We would never expect, I would say, immediate acceptance. Is impossible. Medicine should be very careful, and medical people should be very, very careful in accepting something new.
Agreed. Definitely agree with that. You're also able to determine the nature of a person's health through the human aura. I was curious, have you been able to detect maybe something unusual attached to human auras in your research?
During 15 years of research, of course, I was able to meet many, many interesting people because I've been traveling worldwide in different countries, and very often I was approached by unusual people, mm-hmm. people who was able to heal other people who was able to create very interesting effects in space, create some images in space, create some strong influence to magnetic poles, for example. And, of course, we've been measuring those people. But all those people have very unusual energy fields. And, of course, we can see very specific fields. For example, in Brazil, there are a religion under the name Candomblé. This is based on ancient beliefs of African people in spirits. Mm-hmm. They believe that there are spirits in everything, in water, in stones, in mountains, in rivers, trees, and they can communicate with the spirits. So in the process of this communication, we were able to measure priests of those beliefs, and those priests had really very strong, I would say, entities attached to their energy field.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. So it happens, and that's it. To my mind, it tells us that we know very little about our world. We know very little about human spirit, about human consciousness. Only now we start research, little study worldwide on human consciousness. So we can expect a lot of new effects and a lot of new unusual for us topics. But the main problem is that they are very difficult to replicate these effects. And, you know, science are based on replication, based on repetition.
That's right.
That's why most of scientists, they try not to do with all these topics, because it's really very complicated and very difficult.
I understand. I was curious and just thought that with all of your work, I was almost certain that you came across unusual individuals with particular types of power of healing or psychic perception, that you may have seen something unusual, because from what I've read, these other things that are around those individuals seem to attach themselves to the chakras.
Absolutely. For example, I know several people who train children to see without their eyes. Blind children or blindfolded children. I know a lot of healers in the world, very strong healers in different countries. I've seen people who was able to suspend some subject in the air or to keep some subjects on their bodies. I was able to see people who was able to suspend themselves in the air, not flying, of course. It may be Uri Geller who was able to fly on the stage, but to just to suspend themselves in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a lot of interesting effects in human organism, in human system. And there are ancient systems like Tai Chi, like Qigong, like Chinese training that allow people to achieve those unusual abilities. Same as with telepathy, and we've been doing a lot of research in telepathy, same as with clairvoyance. So it's all effects that do exist, but of course we need a lot of time to understand what is real, what is fake, because it's a lot of fake in this field as well. Should be very, very careful about all these topics.
That was an excerpt from a past interview with Dr. Konstantin Korotkov. Last year, we discussed in depth the nature of ley lines, telluric energy in connection with megalith builders, with many guests, such as Dr. Ross Hamilton, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, Peter Champeau, Matthew Deleuze, and former professor at the University of Calgary, Dr. Carmen Bolter. Dr. Bolter joins us today to talk about her four-part documentary series in production titled The New Atlantis, which also investigates the Bosnian pyramids and the Russian pyramids currently being built. Dr. Carmen Bolter has traveled to Egypt 26 times and is the director, producer, and writer of the powerful documentary series The Pyramid Code. This series has aired in 34 countries. It describes how the Great Pyramid served as an energy generator. It was built on intersecting ley lines, constructed from specific materials, and is now thought to have harnessed and stored power created by the interaction of sunlight on water, moving through passageways to build a charge using large crystal structures. Dr. Bolter is the author of Angels and Archetypes, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness. Dr. Bolter, welcome back to In Other News.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you've also been very busy producing another series called The New Atlantis. 4 episodes. It should be ready to air at the end of the year. Tell listeners what this is.
Well, I've been in production on it since October, and I was approached by a Russian scientist named Valery Uvarov, and he's been building pyramids in Russia, and he wanted me to use his book, The Pyramids, which has a lot of research in it from ancient texts. And so the series is called The New Atlantis. So the first episode is our Atlantean ancestors, and that's looking at the, you know, the documentation from these ancient texts that not too many people have heard about. It's actually speaking to the idea that the Atlanteans knew that a catastrophe was forthcoming. We don't know how they knew, and he's been able to pinpoint the exact date and year that this happened. And what we see in the second episode is called Cosmic Map of All Time, and we're actually looking at the circular zodiac in the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera, and he calls that the calendar of catastrophes, and that's of particular interest because it's pinpointing the exact time when the Atlantean continent sank, and it's also replicated in the linear zodiac in the first hypostyle hall of Dendera. And so this is really profound because most of the Egyptian material is showing that the year was 360 days, and after, of course, the orbit of the planet was knocked off and the axis of the planet was moved 14 degrees, the year was 365 days. And so there's science that goes with that, and it's quite astonishing. So the third episode is called True Source of Pyramid Energy, and he's actually broken down what makes the pyramids function as energy resonators, and how the construction using quartz crystal with a double helix actually has something to do with how the pyramids function. And so the pyramids that he's been building, there's going to be 9 of them in total, and the project's called Project 12, and also it's called the New Atlantis. And at this site where there's the big pyramids already built, and they're building 4 around the outside of that and 4 around the outside in the concentric circles, and they're going to have all different kinds, like they're featuring new technologies and a new paradigm in education and medicine that's, you know, operating in a completely different way than ours, and, you know, beekeeping and agriculture and all these different things. So that's what they're doing with these pyramids, and they're functional pyramids. So he's really clear that some pyramids on the planet are not functional, and that the most recent ones that were built aren't alive. And so there's a full description of how the pyramid energy works in the third episode, and the fourth one is a model for an empowered humanity, and that's looking at this project where they've got alternatives in just about every field as we know it. And so it'll be in the same style as the Pyramid Code, because he's asked for that, so same narrator and the same composer for the original score and that sort of thing. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, yeah. The music and the narrator, it was all very high quality, very unique as well, and fit perfectly with the documentary, The Pyramid Code. And in that documentary, you did point out that the Great Pyramid served as an energy generator. It was built on intersecting ley lines constructed from, you know, very specific materials, and is now thought to have harnessed and stored power created by the interaction of sunlight and water moving through the passageways, and it builds a charge using large crystal structures. However, but that you were pointing out in the first documentary, in The Pyramid Code, that was taken offline. Mm-hmm. But these in Russia will actually be functional as energy generators. What influence will they have? What can you do with this energy?
Well, one of the mandates in the project was to look at the 450,000 school children in the area and see if the emanations of energy coming off the pyramid is affecting them. And so we would have to get a baseline from students who aren't around the pyramid. And they're functional for sure. One of the construction workers, actually, when they were building the pyramid, even before the capstone went on and before the casing stones went on, had a spontaneous healing from a serious asthmatic condition. And he just started to shake inside the pyramid, and half his body broke out into a sweat, and he could hardly breathe. And the next thing you knew, he was completely clear of his asthma and didn't need his inhaler anymore, and that's maintained to this day. And so there, it's the kind of construction, it's the use of the double helix of the crystals, it's poured stone. What they've actually done is crushed quartz and made molds and poured the crushed polymer into these molds that actually are like the arms of the galaxy. And there are crystals inside the pyramid that are like 14 feet high, and they come from Brazil. And it's really definitely a resonance chamber. So there's an oracle chamber, and there's a crystal ball in there that's 108 centimeters across, which is probably the biggest one on the planet, because prior to that, my understanding was that the biggest crystal ball anywhere was at the Smithsonian, and it was only 13 inches across, so this is far bigger. And there's a source of water inside this new pyramid, and this crystal ball kind of spins as the water is pushing up on it. It's actually suspended on the water, and it spins inside this oracle chamber, which I think is incredible. And there's this huge bell in there too, and that they ring the bell and it just keeps on, you know, resonating through. The idea is that the human body and the golden mean ratio and the planet and then the solar system, the galaxy, and the universe are all resonating within the same kind of structure that the pyramid is actually replicating with the sacred geometry. And he's figured all this out, and it works, which is something that most people don't know.
Can you give us an idea, Dr. Bolter, of the location of these pyramids and where the other ones would be built?
Well, the series of nine are all at one location, and they built the first one, which is complete, and then they're building four more this summer and four more next summer. And they are exactly, ironically or whatever, poetically, in the center of the landmass of Russia. So they're in Siberia. So just the way the Great Pyramid is exactly at the center of the longest landmass and the widest landmass as we have it now on the planet, so is the one in Russia, the biggest part of Russia, right in the center.
You mentioned in a past interview that you were working with this consciousness measuring device, and you were measuring the influence of the energy of pyramids. Can you explain that a little bit?
The machine was invented by Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, also in Russia, who's friends with Valery Uvarov. And it's essentially electrophotonic imaging, and it's also referred to as a GDV, which stands for gaseous discharge visualization. And what this means is that this machine is like a camera, and the lens is pointing up, and it's measuring the photonic emissions coming off the human body, but measuring it off the fingertips. And so you cover the fingertip so that there's no light from the outside coming. The device allows for that. And then it sends up a little signal of electricity and then takes a picture of the emissions coming off the fingertips. But then, because of like Chinese medicine and meridians, there's a corresponding place on the body and in the human aura that corresponds to the chakras. So then there's a logarithm that calculates and shows the effect on the human body and the auric field and the chakras. And so we did measurements. We did 300 measurements, over 300, on the 12-12 trip of people before they went into the Great Pyramid, while they were inside, immediately after, and then a delayed post-test, because what I found when I did this study for 10-10-10 was that people needed a little bit more time to integrate, and that there was something about the influence of the pyramid. And the pyramid has been somewhat decommissioned, but it does spring to life. And Valery Uvarov will say, plus or minus 6 days from solstice and equinox, and then January 19th, and he doesn't know why that day is different, but there's something about the positioning of the pyramid in relative to the solar system that actually makes it more active at certain times. And so I haven't finished with the data analysis, the new data, but we certainly were finding that there was a strong influence on people from going into the pyramid, but people reacted differently. But because I had a large enough sample, I was able to look at the statistical, the data quantitatively, which means that you have a large enough sample to see the statistical significance of the changes. And it's profound what we're finding. And this device has been used to measure influences at the Bosnian Pyramid as well. And so in September, I'll be speaking at the Hidden Mysteries Conference, and there's going to be other people who have measured the Bosnian Pyramids, and we'll be able to compare notes about how the device allows you to measure the effect that the pyramid has on people.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Carmen Bolter about her upcoming documentary, The New Atlantis. We'll be right back after this break. Just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Carmen Bolter about her upcoming documentary, The New Atlantis. Wanted to ask you a little bit more about this, the consciousness measuring device. What is it that you think is happening with the influence of the energy around the pyramid and with individuals being around the pyramid or inside the pyramid?
For a long time, I've suspected for myself, having been going to Egypt since 1977, and I've spent a good deal of time inside the Great Pyramid by myself and in private meditations. It seemed to me that there was some influence inside the pyramid that was making me more psychic, but not instantly. But as the energy integrated, something was connecting that was giving me abilities that I hadn't had before. So I was really quite interested in seeing if there was a way to measure that influence. And so by doing the statistical analysis of the chakras with a large group, what I noticed is before we went in the pyramid, there was nothing connecting to the heart chakra. And then there was just two connections between the third eye and the crown, and nothing significant really. And then inside the pyramid, when we did the measurement, all of a sudden the chakras were informing the energy field, and people's auric fields were gaining in general area, because that measures it as well, and the size of the aura. But in the post-test, what we found was that all the chakras were entrained, and the heart was connecting completely to the auric field. And so all of a sudden, the energy started being heart-directed. But the entrainment of the chakras, to me, speaks to the idea of synesthesia, which is a natural phenomena. Children can do it, and it's any walk of life. And what it means is somebody can hear a picture or see music, and it's a cross-sensory enhancement. And that's part of, if you understand what being psychic means, is that you're getting like the hair raising on your skin, and you're getting a gut feeling, or there's more information coming, or something pops into your head and you see, it's almost like seeing a vision or a movie in your head kind of thing. And so you words connect, things connect. And so synesthesia is this cross-sensory ability. And by entraining the chakras, then those abilities are enhanced. So in essence, what I've shown with, is that the Great Pyramid does make these kinds of connections, and it's statistically significant to less than 1 in 1,000 chances that it happened by accident.
Wow, it's fascinating. One of the effects is synesthesia, more psychic energy, ability. What other effects would occur with people?
Well, there's spontaneous healings. I think that what's true is that most people, no matter how spiritual they are or how disciplined they've been doing Tai Chi or meditation, mm-hmm. don't know how to handle the energy that's in the pyramid. And so it's foreign, basically, you know, to them. Now, the ancients were well-versed in this kind of, I was going to say manipulation of energy, but the enhancement. So the high-level initiates from ancient Egypt that no doubt, you know, were influenced also by the high functioning of the Atlanteans, who no doubt came there after Atlantis went down and before as well. They were training themselves to be able to have out-of-body experiences and to be able to move between the physical body and the cosmic energy. And so part of this was accomplished inside the so-called king's chamber in the sarcophagus. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, we've kind of lost our way, and anybody who's seen the Pyramid Code understands that they've never been used as tombs. But because of these initiation exercises and these rituals that were done, and the lying in the sarcophagus in the correct direction puts the energy of the concentration of the shape of the pyramid and the sacred geometry right at the pineal gland in the head. And what the ancients were doing is they were practicing being able to consciously leave the body. And so what would happen is the body would look, you know, silent, and they use the word deceased. It looked not dead, but completely still. And so what we have in terms of Egyptology is poor translations that came later in the dynastic period that were the scribes started making mistakes because they didn't understand the wording in the original text. And so they started to call the initiate who was having out-of-body experiences, they started to call them the deceased, which then translated into, well, then they must have been dead and it must have been a tomb and all that. But that's not it at all. And so the ability to consciously be able to come and go was common to them, and they had two major concepts, the Ka and the Ba. And actually, if you think of Ra being the sun and abracadabra, abaraka, right, that's what they were doing, and that's what, you know, kids are, you know, being shown, you know, in mythology and whatever to make magic. And
right.
So they completely understood, you know, the transmutation of the atom and how these abilities of teleportation, bilocation, all these things that we see in Star Trek and science fiction, they were completely able to do this. So all of what I'm talking about is related to the effect of the pyramid if it's used consciously.
Dr. Bolter, thank you for describing that, because it brings up a lot of other important questions, I think. And one of them is the power of the pineal gland, specifically, and because of fluoridated water, drinking water supplies in cities now, sodium fluoride calcifies the pineal gland. It was shown in a research paper by Dr. Luke. As you were pointing out, the pineal gland was it was very important for the out-of-body experiences of these high-level initiates.
Well, I've been concerned about this for a long time, and I actually moved to Taiwan and was a professor at a university there, and on the grounds that they didn't have fluoride in the water, and now I live in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and there's no fluoride in the water here, and there hasn't been for years and years. And so I know that the calcification of the pineal gland stops the connection to spirit. That's basically how they were able to channel and bring that connection through, and also make these connections to a high level abilities that involve the transmutation of the atom. And so it's true that people are less connected, and to decalcify the pineal gland is quite a task. And so the pineal gland itself looks like an acorn, and then you see that All of the glands in the body are connected to chakras, and the interconnectivity and the entrainment of the chakras is what makes us psychic and have greater abilities. So it's really a big problem and quite a loss, but it does also explain why, you know, people are less tuned in to cosmic consciousness than perhaps the ancient Egyptians or Atlanteans were.
Yes, and specifically the out-of-body experience and going to the other side and coming back with the information, which I could see might be a problem for certain religions.
Well, religion, though, is really about control. It's not the same thing as spirituality, and we're basically told what to think and to have faith and somebody else and external to us, but the ancients really understood how it was all about connection to self. Now, it's easy to leave. The trick is to return and to bring the knowledge back, as you say. And so most of the spiritual practices around the world have something where they would have an out-of-body experience and then they would go into some kind of incubation for 36 hours. And so this was very much, and it's in the ancient texts as well, this is very much something that was practiced in order to be able to bring this cosmic knowledge back. Because it's one thing to just leave, but it's another thing to correctly come back and be able to synthesize and benefit from the cosmic information. Or otherwise, it's just forgotten when you come back in.
What information would these high-level initiates bring back from the other side?
Well, I think it's a connection to ancestral teachers. We've lost the vocabulary and the conversation about these sorts of things by deciding that the ancient Egyptians were infantile and worshipped animals and all that stuff. That isn't so at all. It really was about understanding cosmic consciousness and what are we really doing here? What is our place? And how do we connect? So we are living in, a universal sphere. The cosmos has wisdom, if you will, and the replication of the human body and the solar system, the planet, there's something about all of the systems that follow a certain kind of sacred geometry and a golden mean ratio that the ancients understood. And so they wanted to have full consciousness, not just partial consciousness. So when we pass, like they don't have a word for death, which is clearly outlined in the Pyramid Code, because they knew that when you drop this cloth of the human situation now, that it's the Ba, as I mentioned a minute ago, that would continue to live on. And so the ancients had a ritual called the ceremony of the weighing of the hearts. And so as soon as you dropped your earthly clothing, that you'd be met by Anubis, who would say, "You're dead." And you go, "I am. I feel the same." "No, check it out. Your body's dead over there." "Oh." And so this sort of thing of being able to pass through these dimensional spheres and maintain consciousness was what they were up to. And so they understood that we were spiritual beings having an earthly experience. And that's represented in many of the frescoes around Egypt, where you see that there's a staff which represents the body. It splits in two, which is duality, and it never quite touches the ground. And even the symbolism in hieroglyphic writing of birds can fly in the air and walk on the ground, and that was symbolically saying that really we're far more profound and cosmic, and we're here on Earth having a certain experience. And so that's what they understood, and that's what they practiced.
We're speaking with a former professor at the University of Calgary, Dr. Carmen Bolter, and she has directed, produced, and written an important 5-part television series titled The Pyramid Code. She's also the author of the book Angels and Archetypes, an Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness. In past interviews, we've talked with Carmen Bolter about her book and the series. A new series that she is working on now, titled The New Atlantis, will be coming out by the end of this year. And there are 4 episodes of that. Let's go to the last part of that, the model of empowered humanity.
Model for an empowered humanity. Yes, let's think about that, because most of what's going on in our society right now is disempowering to people. Taking all our disposable income, you know, taxes, insurance, interest, all of these things that really don't serve us. And the system, you know, is pretty much broken. And people are scrambling around for their survival. And, you know, big government is, you know, controlling us in many different ways. And this is not empowerment. Our education system, you know, focuses on obedience and, you know, test-driven and, you know, guessing what the teacher wants and not about true knowledge or personal development or consciousness. And so we've really lost our way. And, you know, even the medical situation is, you know, to prescribe, you know, a prescription for something and cover symptoms and, you know, cut people open as if the body's mechanistic. And it just doesn't work. And so even religion is organized in a way to disempower people, as opposed to true spirituality, which is a connection to source. And so what would we have to recreate in order to be able to be empowered? And that would be free energy. That would be a new model for new paradigm in education that was learner-centered learning instead of teacher-centered teaching. It would really be about allowing people to have reflective consciousness and to think about, you know, how they feel about things rather than, you know, being mechanistic in terms of reading, writing, and arithmetic sort of thing. And so it would be cross-disciplinary, you know, multimedia, multidimensional. And so, you know, healthy food instead of GMOs, and I'm sure you've had many shows about those sorts of things. So it seems like we're really in a desperate breakdown. And, you know, when you think about, you know, chemtrails and the number of people who are getting sick now after exposure to those sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
An empowered humanity would live in harmony with the planet. It would be, instead of power over, it would be empowerment. And so, you know, that would involve new forms of agriculture. And when I say free energy, I mean like what Nikola Tesla, you know, had invented, and then J.P. Morgan came along and said, oh, no, we want to be able to charge money. And if you think about all the money you give to utilities and taxes and insurance and interest, you know, basically to me that's a big falsehood. I've been saying cancel money and start over for 25 years. And so really, you know, we're so used to being enslaved, and most people have so much debt they basically can't, you know, live fully, you know, so they're completely strapped and stressed by it all. So a model for an empowered humanity would really be about collaboration instead of competition. And it would be about, you know, all for one, and recognizing that, you know, there's only one of us here and we're all the same, instead of a couple of people having all the money and controlling other people. So, you know, most people have been distracted through the media. We're all used to being lied to. And I really feel we've lost our way. And so for new systems to come forward in terms of energy, agriculture, education, health, is definitely necessary, and it's not something that a lot of people are talking about.
Right, the new models and how to bring the new models into place. No, you don't often hear that. That's true. You often hear what's wrong with things, but rarely do you hear solid solutions to these problems. But there are a number of economists that have given solid solutions to economic problems in our midst at the moment. On this station, you do hear some of the solutions, and but they're big steps that require, you know, a lot of consensus, people working together on it to make it happen. In your new documentary, your four-part documentary, The New Atlantis, you mentioned earlier about the astrological wheel as a calendar of catastrophe. Could you go into a little bit more detail of that, and then what that means for where we're at right now?
The prophecy, there are some ancient texts that actually were related to Atlantis, and there was a prophecy that a catastrophe was coming. And the way they worded it was that the head of the crab would end up aligned with the heart of the lion. And this is making reference to astrological ages and Leo and Cancer being the crab and Leo being the lion. And so somehow they ended up colliding, which is impossible if you think about astrological ages taking 2,000 years to move, and even, you know, a month in the year for the way the zodiac works. And so right precisely at the time it's been calculated, there's a woman named Svetlana Pavlova in Russia that cracked the code on this. And it's pointing to 13,660 years ago. And that's when Atlantis went down. And there may have been more than one catastrophe, but the thing that finally took the planet down, sorry, the Atlantis, the continent down, was due to an asteroid hitting the planet, which knocked the axis of the Earth over by 14 degrees. But it changed the calendar from 360 days to 365 days. And so the ancient Egyptians actually took a record of this, and it's actually pre-flood, post-flood. And so it's written in more than one place. And of course, because we haven't had the eyes to see and the ears to hear, we didn't understand what we were looking at. And so, you know, the Denzera zodiac has been, you know, largely uninterpreted. And certainly in the first hypostyle hall, the Temple of Dendera in Egypt, it was like looking into a cup of black coffee before the ceiling was cleaned. And you could see that there were figures, and it's also 40 feet up. And so it was almost, and we didn't have the high-resolution cameras in the past. And so now, with the, you know, HD cameras and the ceiling being cleaned, we're actually able to look at what is being said. And I've been analyzing this for a good number of years now. And it's right there when the catastrophe happened on the planet. And so, you know, this is highly significant if we think about all the different mythology that talks of a world flood. And some survived, not too many. Basically, the whole planet went down, but a few people survived.
Oh, the asteroid that hit the planet slowed the orbit of the planet around the sun.
Yep.
That's really interesting. Can you talk about some of the carbon-14 dating that was done with these Bosnian pyramids?
Yes. The Bosnian pyramids, first of all, there's a media blackout on it, and they were told, don't report on it, and you know, nonsensical. But that has to do with the implications of the pyramid being what it is, the size it is, and the fact that it's made out of poured stone. And so Dr. Sam has had a number of different volunteers doing excavations around the Bosnian pyramids, and they actually found some organic material between the third and fourth course of poured stones. And this organic material was carbon-14 analyzed, and notoriously, the farther back you go with carbon-14 dating, the more there's a plus or minus number of years that are possibly in error. And so this, the date came back at 24,600 years, and that would be plus or minus 1,200. And so that's a full precession, a precessional cycle of 25,960, 920, something like that. The other thing is that the precessional cycle changed when the catastrophe happened. So it was a complete shakedown in terms of the cosmic energy, and it really was very disruptive. And so what we see is the Bosnian pyramids were exactly one precession ago, and then there's places like Göbekli Tepe in Turkey that was cut, and both of them were decommissioned, and that was half a precession ago, so 13,000 years ago. And so the Bosnian pyramid was found covered in silt inside, but it has the same passageways and a lot of characteristic features like the pyramids in Egypt have. And so that starts to make us wonder if they're related, if the same kind of group built them, or, you know, how we end up with this phenomena. But the Bosnian pyramids are so old that they've been covered with soil, which then led to vegetation growing over the top of them. And so, you know, people didn't really even recognize that there was a pyramid underneath. And so it's going to take a good long time to do the excavation there. But it is pointing to a full precession ago, which is highly significant. And that was what the December 21st, 2012 date was as well. So there was like the Mayan calendar was coming to an end, which is a 5,000-year cycle, but a 2,000-year cycle, which is the astrological age, and then the 26,000-year, and even larger cycles that all were coming to a zero point at the same time, which is what the significance of that date was.
Dr. Bolter, can you give us your take on where these pyramids came from? Were they built by Atlanteans, and why?
Okay, so first of all, I think that the Atlanteans were far more sophisticated and had greater abilities than we do. I think we're about as dense as we can get now and disconnected. And I think that they had a communication with the gods, if you will, but with beings that were more evolved. And to be able to have that communication with something that was normal for them, which isn't normal for us anymore. And so there were ancestral teachers. Now, the Mayans, the ancient Indians, Sumerians, Egyptians, they all seem to talk about a communication with the gods. And it's not that they were learning that from each other, because they lived in different parts of the world. And so what we're coming up with now is something that we're calling the third-party hypothesis, that each of them, each of these groups of higher-level beings, were connected to ancestral teachers. And so I think that the Atlanteans were well-versed in this, and they also understood how the telluric energy of the planet needed to be able to connect with the cosmic energy of the solar system and the galaxy. And there's something about the resonance features of pyramids that enhance that. And they were able to use them as energetic tools that were actually helping to stabilize the energy on the planet. And so it seems that the Atlanteans went to various places on the planet. It's my conviction that it was a worldwide culture, and that they were able to travel by sea and go various places, and that everywhere that there's pyramids, functional pyramids, perhaps were colonies of the Atlanteans, but they also knew that the catastrophe was coming. And so there were evacuation plans that were made, and groups left Atlantis before the disaster and went to the places that they had already built pyramids in advance. And so I think that they really understood what we're all trying to find out now. What is our place in the universe? What are we doing here? Is there any other life other than us? Like I said before, we have completely lost our way, and we've kind of, quote-unquote, outlawed the conversation. And the other thing is that the education system doesn't want the disciplines talking to each other, so it's not cross-disciplinary. But we need climatology to speak to archaeology, to speak to linguistics, and all these different things to piece the story back together. I mean, we can believe that there's no purpose and that, you know, God is outside of us, and we can believe what we're told about religion and whatnot, but I think that we're not getting the truth about what really happened. And so we've ended up in a situation where we're lost and we don't know the answers. And that's what I think is the significance of piecing all these things back together, so that we can really understand what's going on.
Agreed. We're not only lost, but intentionally poisoned and forced to be separated from the telluric energy, because in one of our interviews we talked about the aerosol operations, and that cut off from the human connection to the telluric energy of the planet. When these aircraft spray these metallic particulates in the atmosphere, it scatters that connection, I suspect. Dr. Bolter, the director, producer, and writer of the five-part television series The Pyramid Code, and former professor at the University of Calgary, and also the author of the book Angels and Archetypes, An Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness. Thank you once again for being on In Other News.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m. A big thank you again to the listeners for supporting WBAI right now at this important transitional period. If you have not received your premium for any fundraising with In Other News, contact me at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com.